You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Well, let's give a few details on the Brewers now and their 10-game winning streak. Six of those 10 games coming in two three-game sweeps of the Los Angeles Dodgers. 6-5 was the final yesterday, though it did come with some drama. It was a close game throughout, and the Dodgers were threatening in the bottom of the ninth. In fact, they had the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth. They were at 1.1 strike away from losing to the Brewers, but they managed to score a run. And then finally, pitcher Abner Uribe retired Mookie Betts with the bases loaded for that final out in the bottom of the ninth. And 6-5 again was the score. Since May 25th now, is that right? Yeah, since May 24th, as Roger notes on Facebook, the Brewers are 34-12. They have 31 wins against teams above 500 more than any other. They have the best record in baseball since May 24th. And yet for all of this, still not alone in first place in the National League Central. I mean, at one point we were 6.5 back of the Cubs. And now we're tied with the Cubs, although they have the tiebreaker so far. So technically we're not even in first place on our own there because, again, the Brewers have one of the hottest records in baseball right now, along with the Cubs and the Detroit Tigers. So this could all come to a head next week, because a week from today is when the Brewers and Cubs start a series at American Family Field. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. The Brewers right now, they've left Los Angeles. They're in Seattle. They will be playing the Mariners tonight and tomorrow night, and then Wednesday afternoon, and then they are off on Thursday. They come home starting this Friday for a series against the Florida Marlins, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then they have that Cubs series next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So to get back to tonight, they are in Seattle. The pregame will start at 8:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Park Falls, and Hayward. So again, plenty of reason to tune in to the Brewers. And hey, if they can pull off those wins tonight, tomorrow, and get to 12 in a row, those folks down in Southeast Wisconsin who have a George Webb's restaurant near them will be able to get free hamburgers, because that goes back a ways to the when was it? I know it was 1987 because they won 13 in a row, but then yes, there was one since then. What was it, 2010 or something like that, where they had 12 games, but it was between,
oh, went into the playoffs. That's right.
Yeah. Went into the playoffs, but, yeah, it's one of those fun little giveaways it doesn't happen. It's not every day your team wins 12 in a row. So that's really nice.
No, it takes at least 12 days.
Good. Excellent point. Thank you. This guy ruins everything. So I'm looking at stories that we're going to be sharing with folks today. And we get this reminder that, we have a president who can even ruin our escape into sports. Threatening to unleash his army of trolls on two sports teams unless they restore the racist nicknames that had been sent to history's dumpster. But Trump now says, he said over the weekend, he's threatening to hold up a new stadium deal for the Washington NFL team if it does not restore its old offensive name, a slur of Native Americans. And while he was at it, he said the Cleveland Guardians baseball team needs to revert to its former Indians nickname. Now, Washington's been the Commanders since 2022. Think of it whatever you will. But the team is looking to get a new stadium, go back to the old RFK Stadium site. And in January, before leaving office, President Biden signed a bill that transferred land from the federal government to the District of Columbia, and now Trump is threatening to hold up that deal. Next thing you know, I'm thinking Trump's going to demand any stadium be named for RFK Jr. because, you know, while we're offending all of our Native American communities, why not offend the whole Kennedy family as well? In D.C., residents elect a mayor, a city council, and commissioners to run the city's day-to-day operations, but Congress maintains control of the city's budget in America's most ironic ongoing example of taxation without representation. And all this so that the racist in chief can call for real damage to be done to a place, Washington, D.C., that should have become its own state a very long time ago. As for lumping in Cleveland as well, even though he has no leverage over that club, well, in doing that, he just kind of gives up the game. History is going to look back on all these moments when Trump coincidentally reached back into his dusty bag of cheap tricks and pulled out a race card to play, or anti-LGBTQ, or xenophobia. And history will note how ramblings like these often coincided with an effort to change the subject when he was getting negative press for something else. So I think we've given this just enough attention to remind folks that we have a raging racist ruining things in D.C., and we can return to what he's trying to get us to stop talking about. His really weird about-face on Jeffrey Epstein. We're actually not going to talk about that much either, only to say we are recognizing Trump's effort to shift the spotlight. So Trump tried to make it look like progress when he told his Justice Department to seek the release of sealed grand jury transcripts in the prosecution of Epstein, the sexual predator, and his former girlfriend. But former federal prosecutors said that even if this happens, it's unlikely to produce much that isn't already known. Because they tell you when prosecutors seek an indictment, they don't share everything with the grand jury. Just enough to get the indictment so the subjects can be charged. And even then, it could take weeks or months of legal wrangling to decide what can be released. There's still a whole lot that would not be released by unsealing the grand jury transcripts that led to the indictment. So again, this is all pretty much a diversion compared to a wholesale release of all the Epstein files, again, minus identifying information about the victims. And if Republicans wanted to do that, they would have signed on to a Democratic plan to force the DOJ to release the Epstein files, but they voted that down last week. Instead, this week, they're going to try to, again, create a diversion by saying they're supporting a resolution that calls for the release. They could have done more. They chose not to. The Midwest Farm Report is coming up. Dr. Kristen Lyerly to follow here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
If you missed it last night with the Brewers out on the West Coast, they were winners 6-0 over Seattle, meaning they're now at an 11-game winning streak. Brandon Woodruff, in just his third start of the season, after missing all of last year, went 6 innings through only 62 pitches, walked nobody, gave up just 2 singles, and your first-place Milwaukee Brewers were 6-0 winners. It was a pitcher's duel for the first few innings. Seattle's George Kirby carried a no-hitter into the sixth, but then the Brewers' bats came alive. 4 runs scored in that inning. And so the Brewers are 1 victory away from George Webb Restaurants having to dole out some burgers and 2 victories away from tying the Twins for the longest streak in the majors this season because Minnesota won 13 straight back in May. So we are now 100 games into the season. The Brewers have won 60-40, first time in team history they've won their first, they've hit 60 wins in their first 100 games. And again, with a different roster than they had last time around. No Willie Adames, no Corbin Burns, no Devin Williams. But they do have some new faces, like Jacob Mizorowski, and he will be pitching tonight for the Brewers at Seattle. Pregame begins at 8:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Hayward. Then the Brewers will play again in Seattle tomorrow afternoon, pregame starting at 2:05. Thursday, they're off. They come home for a weekend series against the Florida Marlins, and then the Chicago Cubs come to town next week starting Monday. The Brewers back alone in first place over the Cubs for the first time since mid-April, basically. The Trump administration, the election of Donald Trump has a lot of significance again, a lot of things that folks warned were coming, that a group of people hostile to the Affordable Care Act are going to make sure that it's not as affordable. And that's exactly what is happening now, as health insurance companies say that their premiums will be going way up next year for people who buy their insurance on the Affordable Care Act marketplace. An analysis from KFF, formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation, showed that the average person who buys Affordable Care Act insurance will be paying 75% more for their premium. And of course, a big reason for that would be the reduction in the subsidies and the enhanced subsidies that came during the pandemic that helped make health insurance more affordable. With Republicans controlling Congress and the Trump administration wanting those subsidies to go away. As one example, if someone is paying $60 a month for their health insurance this year, it's going to be more like $105 a month next year. And as National Public Radio reports, people who are generally healthy might well decide that the higher premium is not worth it. They will go without health insurance. And then they're going to get sick or injured. With that many more people, an estimated 4 million more people without health insurance, it's going to lead to higher bills for them. Or if they can't pay it, it's going to lead to higher premiums for all the rest of us because there will be more uncompensated care. And as more healthy people opt out of the market, the insurance pool will be left with those who cost insurance companies more, people who can't afford to go without health insurance, and so their premiums will go up again. And as much as Republicans have been crowing about this, and now they're of course referring to this as, well, this is just the unsustainable skyrocketing cost of Obamacare, according to Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana. Well, yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you attack the Affordable Care Act and make it less affordable, it makes it easy for you to say, gosh, look how expensive Obamacare is now. Yeah, because of you. To which I again have to remind people, and I'm never going to stop reminding people, the Affordable Care Act, derided by Republicans as Obamacare, is a Republican idea. It was created by a Republican think tank that did not want single-payer and or government-run health insurance. And so the idea was to continue using the private marketplace, but just help people afford private insurance. That's all the Affordable Care Act is at its heart, is, again, pooling our resources to help everybody have health insurance because we all save when we're all covered, or we all pay when more Americans aren't covered. It is actually that simple, and that's where the Republican idea came from and where the Obama administration said, okay, we'll try that at least as a start, and we can always work to improve it later. We can add a public option, for example. Have something like Medicare for All or Medicaid for All that covers Americans and have them compete. If the private sector of health insurance thinks it's so good, they shouldn't be afraid of competition. I mean, isn't that what we hear about public schools all the time, is that they shouldn't be afraid of a little competition? But thanks to the late Senator Joe Lieberman, who withheld his vote, Democrats had to pull out the public option, so there is not one in the Affordable Care Act. And so it's all about these private companies, and if they're not getting premium subsidies from the federal government, of course they're going to jack up their rates. So once again, we are living that whole lesson of those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. And so we are about to repeat the cycle of higher premiums and people deciding to go without insurance and then ending up with big medical bills and then ending up with more medical debt and more medical bankruptcies and more uncompensated care, which is going to put more hospitals and clinics out of business, and it's going to raise premiums for all the rest of us. That ain't doom and gloom, folks. That's exactly what people tried to tell voters last year. And whatever the result last November, they chose the way they did. And this is what's going to happen going forward, as we're now seeing from these new estimates on what's going to happen with health insurance premiums on the Affordable Care Act marketplace coming up next year. It's a little quiet out there in Wisconsin politics, but it won't be for long. Somebody's going to make an announcement and things are going to move real fast. We're going to talk to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area coming up next here up north. $7.35. Welcome back. Nice to have you here live from Lake Wasota and from the Green Bay area as well, where Dr. Kristen Lyerly is hanging around with us in what a green long sleeve, something that at first I thought was just a, you know, just another Packer jersey. But no, is that from Wellstone Action by chance?
No, this is from the DFL.
Oh, from the Minnesota Democratic Party, the DFL, mm-hmm. Democratic Farmer Labor Party, a Paul Wellstone shirt in honor of the anniversary of his birth today.
Yes, and Corinne's statement and the fact that the purpose of government is to serve the people. And that's not what's happening right now, but that is exactly what Paul Wellstone stood for. So mm-hmm. In solidarity.
That was nice. We don't often get a lot of costume changes here on the radio. So appreciate you going from Bay Beach to Paul Wellstone. So that's mm-hmm. great. So we've both been candidates. We've both been in races that either looked at having potential primaries or, you know, a lot of discussions about, well, who should run? And you've talked about people running for assembly or Senate or Congress and, you know, which race is right for them. And the chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who's also a Democrat, the chairmanship flips between Democrat and Republican chairs. Anyway, put up a post about primaries because there's been a little bit of, if not controversy, then discussion in a couple of different legislative districts about to what degree either the state party or others, you know, are influencing whether there will be a primary or not. And for me, this began when Corinne Hendrickson mentioned that she was thinking of running in the 17th State Senate District down there near Southwest Wisconsin, because I knew that recently State Representative Jenna Jacobson had announced that she was running for the race. And when I hear that a state legislator is going to be running, like state rep is going to run for state Senate, you know, I have to admit, I assume like, okay, well, the decks have been cleared and that's what's going to be the case. And we had Robin Vining announce, you know, that she's going to be running against Senator Rob Hutton of Brookfield. And you find out that that's not necessarily so, that there are other people interested in running. So to what degree is a primary good or bad? And down in the 17th Senate District there was a long Facebook post. Brick Cider is the Facebook account. And somebody talking about their desire to explore a run for state Senate. And they felt like they were talked out of or maybe intimidated out of running by a group called the SSDC, the State Senate Democratic Committee. Now, the SSDC is not exactly the same thing as the state party. This is the political caucus for the Democratic members of the state Senate. So there's the SSDC, the State Senate Democratic Committee, and the ADCC, the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee. And they obviously get involved in recruiting candidates, just as at the congressional level, Kristen and I were both, you know, hounded by the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And in all cases, Kristen, well-meaning folks, but that does not necessarily make them, you know, the be-all and end-all experts on local races.
I have so many thoughts on this. First of all, to make it very clear, the SSDC's job is to recruit people to run for state Senate, and the ADCC's job is to recruit people to run for assembly. And the DTRIPS is to get people to run for Congress all over the country. So there are bodies that do that work. And there are seats that they focus on that really can make a difference, where they look at the numbers and they think this is a seat that we can win. So they want to make sure that that's a great competitive district. So they tend to put a lot of time and energy and effort into these districts. And the 17th Senate District here in Wisconsin, which goes from South Central Wisconsin all the way over to Southwestern Wisconsin, is one of those districts. They want that candidate to be the shiniest, best supported, greatest fundraiser, all of those things. And when they find somebody who they think is that person, they elevate that person. But when there are other people who are on the outside and don't have the same connections and maybe the same background, it's harder to break through. And it can be a challenge. But I would say, as somebody who actually helps to recruit and support candidates in Northeast Wisconsin, a primary is not a bad thing. A primary is an opportunity to talk about what you care about and to get your voice out there. And if it's done well and in a positive way, and that's what people want to see, they really, really want to see good people talking about the things that they care about, it could be a really great thing for our democracy as a whole.
And I'm saying, for the sake of argument, not to disagree, but to give the other side of the argument on this, is that primaries take up resources mm-hmm. that could be used against, in this case, the Republican incumbent, Howard Markline in Senate District 17, Rob Hutton over in the Milwaukee suburbs. And so there are groups that, you know, very much try to dissuade people from announcing if they think that there's a candidate. So Ann Jacobs, who's an attorney and the Democratic chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, has seen all this, and I wanted to share her thoughts on this that she posted over the weekend. It's 4 points. Number one, primaries are neither inherently good nor bad. For example, good, create awareness of the race, strengthen the candidate message. Bad, siphon dollars needed for the race and damage the eventual candidate. Yeah, especially if it's a negative primary. We've mm-hmm. definitely seen that. Number two, the job of the SSDC and similar funding orgs is not to hand out participation trophies to everyone who indicates they are interested in running. Their stated goal is to fund the candidate they think most likely to succeed. That is a political decision. Three, running for office takes more than, I think I'm very smart and have good ideas. Maybe you are smart and have great ideas. You also need to have a plan on how to run, how to convince people to vote for you, how to find resources to fund you. Running for office is hard. That's why there are various training groups to help you learn to do it, like the aforementioned Wellstone Action. If you're not willing to do or have not done the work on these logistics, people will not consider you a serious candidate. And four, if you really want to run, all you need are nomination paper signatures on some documents. If what is stopping you is that people aren't supporting your effort, then perhaps it is time for some introspection on why that is. And I mean, that was amazingly blunt and, you know, says it all, makes the case right there for, you know, don't be whining if SSDC, ADCC, or DCCC goes with somebody else because, you know, they've got a job to do.
Well, I'll say ultimately it comes down to, do the people support you? So if you are not coming into this race with support of the people and you can't garner that kind of support, then maybe you're not the right person. Maybe you are a support person for the person who's going to be the candidate. And, you know, I'll use an example. When I ran for Congress in the last cycle, there were three of us who stepped up. There were three of us who wanted to run for that same seat. And what we decided to do was put our heads together. Before any of us filed, we started to get media attention. We started talking to people and we tried to figure out where we all fit into this process. And we knew we all had a role there, but we didn't know what our individual roles would be. And as time played out and as we had more conversations with people, it became very clear where we all belonged. So there's a way to do that, working collectively together. I think one of the tricks with candidates, though, is that in order to be a candidate, you have to have some, like, a little, like, maybe a little touch of narcissism, maybe.
What? Us?
So everybody thinks, like, I'm the right person, and you have to be able to set that aside and mm-hmm. be there for the people.
There was quite a response on that post from Ann Jacobs by State Senator Kelda Royce, and it was responding to somebody who wanted to know more about what is the SSDC and the ADCC. And so Senator Kelda Royce put up, the State Senate Democratic Committee is made up of the Democratic senators in Wisconsin, and our only job is to win the majority. We have limited resources and time, and so we work our butts off to recruit and support our Democratic candidates in every seat. We have been incredibly successful protecting all of our incumbents and flipping all four even slightly competitive seats in the last cycle where we faced national headwinds. Now, we have the possibility of a Democratic trifecta for the first time in 15 years. I personally will again raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for these candidates. The idea that Democratic senators who are doing this work, should never get involved in supporting candidates in must-win seats until after the primary, especially in cases where there is a very strong standout candidate, is crazy. We need to be smart with our resources and time. Anybody gets to run for anything. It's not hard to get on the ballot. But to earn my support personally, someone has to share my core values and show that they are capable of doing the work to win. It is really hard to get elected, especially in these critical seats where the races now cost millions of dollars. And you have to oust a powerful, well-funded, well-known Republican incumbent. Why would anyone who shares our values want us to sit on the sidelines for a year when doing so has cost us seats in previous cycles? So again, a very full-throated defense of how the SSDC and the ADCC run things, but I will be the first to tell you it's not going to sit well with other folks who feel like they're being, you know, excluded from tapping into resources simply because there is, here's that word, an anointed candidate. People in Democratic circles, probably Republican too, hate the impression that one candidate is being anointed to run. So, Kristen, what you just explained, I watched you guys in this process last year, multiple people, you know, looking at where they fit in with the right race. From my distance over here, looked like a textbook case of how to find the strongest candidates in the strongest seats and give yourselves every opportunity to win.
Because we have a common goal, which is to win so that we can do the work for the people. And, you know, I think another really important point here, Pat, is our primary is late.
Yes.
Our primary isn't until August, and the general is in early November. So if we have competitive primaries, we don't have a lot of time to line up behind that one candidate between August and November. It seems like a lot of time, but it actually isn't in an election cycle. So that's why we really have to do a lot of that work in advance of the primary. And that's why the work of the SSDC and the ADCC is so important. Having said that, if you are thinking about running, start having conversations with people. Talk to the people in your community. Talk to the leaders. Talk to the electeds. That is ultimately government is people working together for the good of the people. So start working together now. It's not too late.
No, it's not. And again, every district is going to be different. Every candidate is different. And that takes us to, you know, the third congressional district, where there are three Democrats running already, three women, all from the Chippewa Valley, interested in running. One ran last year and was very competitive with Derek Van Orden. And there are definitely people who feel like the decks should be cleared for Becca Cook to run and be the nominee again. But part of the reason there are already two other candidates is this feeling of, well, she had her turn or she gave it her best and now we want to give it a try. The, you know, obviously a lot of powers that be say, no, this was our nominee. They're in the strongest position. I don't envy any of them. And I frankly feel, I don't know if blessed is the right word, but I get to provide a forum here for everybody. All three of those candidates know they can come here, make their best case. They know where I stand as a former elected official is everybody come here, make your case, but then come the day after the primary. If you are not with a full-throated endorsement of your nominee, you're the bad guy in this case. And I'm not going to lie. There's some people very close to me who were the bad guys last year when, you know, there was a nominee and you know, the least amount was done possible for the nominee in some of these races. We all, you know, who are invested in November have to come together after the primary and go, this is the way forward, as difficult as it is.
Right. That's, this isn't a time to hold grudges. This is mm-hmm. a time to work together to make the change that we all want to see. And just briefly, I'll tell you, we've got four people who are looking at running in Northeast Wisconsin. And I believe in Glenn Grothman's district, there are four people who have already filed. So yep. Enthusiasm is high. Get involved. Even if it feels impossible, get involved in some sort of a meaningful way. There is a place for you at the table.
So there you go. You've heard the pluses, the minuses of primaries and support behind them. And in all cases, there is room for you to increase mm-hmm. your civic engagement. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then for the rest who are sticking around here, Jimmy Cusco will be out along and we'll talk about, how about those Brewers? 10 in a row. Yeah, that's a pretty fun thing to talk about. I think we'll do that after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, I'll be in Oshkosh. We'll be hearing from Gordon Hintz, the Winnebago County Executive. We'll also be talking to a provost from the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh about happenings there, along with our Week in Review panel, which includes former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze. All that and much more. Oh, also State Representative Lee Snodgrass from the Appleton area will be joining us, and Mike Clemens with a look at weekend sports. A very busy day tomorrow from Oshkosh on these mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News and right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where today we're in Madison, where Parker Olson produces what we do, and Parker's not a coffee drinker.
That but I am not.
Parker pointed me toward the coffee pot here because my original gas station coffee is gone. So I thought, I see a coffee pot there. I will fill it up.
Yeah.
There's one of those little single serving Keurig cup thingies.
Sure. Okay.
And there's a coffee pot.
Yeah.
I filled it up from the coffee pot.
Okay.
I put in a little bit of cream and sugar.
There you go.
Raised it to my lips. It is ice cold.
Well.
I mean.
Yeah.
Is it like yesterday's coffee?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Is it decaf that's next? You have to use the single serve? I do not know if this has any benefit whatsoever. Certainly not in terms of heat.
Well, here's the thing.
Maybe not caffeine.
It may have shocked you enough that you're more awake now.
Oh, I'm more awake now, yes.
See, it did the job.
It did this job without having to ingest a thing.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. First world problems. But here's a problem I don't have. I am unburdened by immense knowledge in cryptocurrency. I have a healthy dose of skepticism at this point, which does not mean I'm writing it off entirely. I'm completely admitting I will need to learn more. What I've learned is that cryptocurrency involves, you know, a whole lot of data processing, which means a whole lot of electricity and everything that comes from it, and that the regulatory framework around it is, shall we say, still a work in progress. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do anything about it. Some folks in Washington said they were doing something about it last week. It was allegedly crypto week, and Congressman Brian Steil talked all about passing some kind of stablecoin legislation that he said was going to put a regulatory framework around cryptocurrency. A lot of Democrats disagreed and saw it as more of a sweetheart deal. I am again here to tell you that I can't say with authority that it is more one way or the other. I can say this as a former legislator. There is a role for legislatures to play at the state level to protect consumers and perhaps financial institutions, small businesses, the economy. Somebody should be thinking about these things. I have found two people who are thinking about these things. There's State Senator Kel DeRoys and there is State Representative Ryan Spouty. And welcome to you both. I hope your coffee is hot, and I thank you for being here with us this morning.
Good morning, Pat. I'm sorry to say I actually do like iced coffee.
Well, I like iced coffee when I know it's coming. I wasn't expecting it. Kelda, these are weighty issues that we're about to discuss, but I've got to get the fun stuff out of the way here first, because Trygve Olson was filling in for Todd Alba yesterday, and Tony up in Ashland was listening, and he asked this question on YouTube. Did you know Kelda wrote musicals? Found that out yesterday from Trygve Olson. How do you plead?
Well, guilty, but not any complete musical. So
oh, okay.
You're never going to find anything in like the Library of Congress. But yeah, I was a theater major in college, and actually my best friend from college is a musical theater composer, and he's very successful. So it's really fun to see, you know, the early things that we did together go in the garbage, but he's actually very successful.
Kelda, I will feel much better now when you write Wisconsin Legislature the Musical. I just feel like you've already got some verses in your head that will make, you know, Book of Mormon look like child's play by the time you are done. I hope that this happens. So tuck that away for future reference. All right. Now let's cover the matter at hand here. And Kelda, while you've got the floor, we'll start with you. What is the bill that you and Representative Spouty are working on from a state level when it comes to crypto, and especially as we see them on these ATM machines that are popping up around the state?
So this is basically a consumer protection bill. We know that Wisconsinites want to experiment and learn about these new kinds of technologies, including cryptocurrency. But unfortunately, what's happening right now with these crypto kiosks being totally unregulated is that people are being scammed and they're being used to facilitate criminal activity. So massive fraud. And stories are really, really heartbreaking. People just losing their life savings in an instant. So this is a bill to basically put a framework, create some guardrails so that people can safely use cryptocurrency kiosks and so that there's some accountability and law enforcement can actually go after these criminals, which right now it's almost impossible for them to do.
And Representative, why don't you help fill in some more, tell us more about the bill and your involvement in it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Pat. Good to see you, Calda, as always. Senator Royce and I teamed up on this. Former prosecutor. I was a drunk driving prosecutor, actually. That was my primary focus. But as we're all well aware, there are many crimes against people's property that aren't tangible, that you can't actually see. And crypto is, it's the Wild West still. There's still a lot of unregulated areas of that, we'll call it enterprise. And what we're doing is we are stepping up at the state level and we are saying, hey, we need to have some rules. We need to have some ground game rules that everyone is expected to follow. And the goal, we want to encourage entrepreneurship and the development of new technology, but we also need to be serious. There are many cases, both here in Wisconsin and across the country, of folks, frequently they're seniors, who are being defrauded. They are losing just an incredible amount of money, as Senator Royce mentioned, like that. We need to have some good government, some very basic regulations in place to make sure that people are not cheated and scammed out of their livelihoods. And that is what this bill aims to accomplish.
Senator, can we then get into a little bit more specifics, either if not what the bill does or maybe what it's trying to prevent? Are there examples of scams or crimes that have been seen elsewhere that we don't want to see happen here?
Absolutely. And they're already happening here, to be clear. You know, a lot of scams basically tell you to go put money in this kiosk because you're going to buy something from overseas, or they're used for, you know, criminals use them to transfer proceeds of their ill-gotten activities. We've also seen a startling rise in the number of love bombing, sort of catfishing schemes where really targeting people who are isolated and, you know, feeling sad and lonely. And they meet somebody on the internet who, you know, tells them that they love them and kind of carpet bombs them with affection and then has a need for money for some family member surgery or something like that. And before the person realizes it's a scam, their money is gone. So we worked with the Department of Financial Institutions on this bill. They have just promulgated some regulations, but they are really excited to update our statutes. Right now, if you transfer money using your credit union or an online service like PayPal or Venmo, it's regulated. So this bill basically turns crypto kiosk operators into regulated money transferers, meaning they have to obey the same rules and have the same protections as your bank. You have to verify the identity of the people who are using this. And this is important for law enforcement. If there is an allegation of a crime, that they can go back and say, well, here's this person's ID, here's what they presented us, and here's the name they gave us. There's a daily limit so that you could only withdraw or you could only use up to $1,000. This is really important because if somebody, you know, is asking for $40,000, you could lose that in a day right now. There's also the ability to get a refund from the crypto operator if within 30 days you have reported to law enforcement and reported to the kiosk operator that you were scammed. And that's really, really important because right now there's functionally no way for people who have been victimized to get their money back.
Can you talk, Representative Spouty, a bit about just the volatility of crypto? I worry, at the risk of getting too far in the weeds here, but that somebody may have thought they were investing so much or, you know, spending so much on this. They do feel like they were scammed. They want to get something back. And the response to them is, well, now it's only worth, you know, this much. And again, I mean, who knows? You're basically looking to see that, you know, dollar for dollar, if somebody gets scammed, they're going to recover the money that they thought they were putting toward what turned out to be a fraudulent transaction. Is that about right?
Yes, that is correct. I'm not I don't own any Spouty coin. I don't, I'm not in that market personally. But the whole purpose of this bill, the goal of this bill, is when we have these regulations, these licensure requirements, these know your customer requirements, warnings on a crypto kiosk. You can see these in, they're sprouting up all over in malls and in convenience stores, gas stations. Warnings, that's another important part of this bill. The goal is to have the number of cases where people, as we are seeing, like I said, across the country, including here in Wisconsin, we want the number of those cases from the get-go to go down. We don't want to have folks in a situation where they are seeking a refund because they've been defrauded. So again, kind of setting aside the whole, what's it like to be in that market? If you play by the rules and you want to do crypto, good on you, go for it. We are setting these regulations in place so that way we do not have as many instances of criminals using a lack of regulation to defraud people of incredible amounts of money.
It would be nice if this were a nonpartisan, non-political issue. Tony puts up on YouTube, who could possibly be against this bill? Well, I'm sorry to put some politics into us, but I have a feeling that maybe a certain White House occupant who has made more than $1 billion with his own cryptocurrency, which seems an awful lot like a shell game to me, might be it. And so, Kelda, when we see what Congress was working on last week, and we know that, you know, Wisconsin Congressman Brian Stile was one of those leading the charge on this, how confident do you feel that what Congress and the Trump administration are doing will be helpful to you as state legislators or an impediment?
Well, I'm very concerned that this absolutely corrupt regime in Washington is going to try to crack down on states' ability to protect consumers. You know, we have never seen a president monetize being in the White House the way that this president has. And one of the ways that he's doing that is with crypto schemes. And, you know, any type of financial asset that you might have, whether it's cash in the bank, whether it's, you know, jewelry or gold or stocks, bonds, real estate, there are regulatory guardrails in place. Even if you're in, you know, more speculative markets like early stage investing or hedge funds, private equity, there are still rules in place and there are regulatory regimes that have to be followed. And crypto really is the Wild West. And that is why it is the, you know, the gambling of choice, the asset of choice for criminals and fraudsters. And, you know, the idea that we should just sit by as people are scammed, I think is outrageous, right? I mean, what is government for if we're not going to stop crime and keep people safe?
And that's where when Congressman Stile says we want to spur innovation, development, and growth in crypto, again, the sense I get from you and others is saying, okay, in the point where it's legal and does not become the Wild West. And so I'm very thankful to see state-based legislation like this. Senator Kelda Royes of Madison, Representative Ryan Spouty of Ashwaubenon, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
All right. Have a wonderful day. A local update is next for some of you. And then in our next hour, Chad Holmes, Sean O'Malley, Joe Zepecki on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.